The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guests on Off the Shelf are Brian Friel, he's a senior contracts analyst, and Cameron Luthy, senior budget analyst, both from Bloomberg Government. And it's always a pleasure to have these guys on the show with lots of great information and analysis of the federal marketplace. And so, Cameron and Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us, Roger.
Great to be back.
Well, I'm looking forward to the conversation. We're going to hit a number of things and talk about the current state of the federal market from sort of a numbers market perspective, winners, losers, that sort of thing. And with that in mind, Bloomberg Government released on June 8th of this year its BGov 200, the Federal Industry Leaders for 2015 report. We're going to spend some time talking about that and what it tells us about the market and where things are going, that sort of thing. So, first of all, guys, Brian, the highlights of your report and the analysis that Bloomberg has done on the federal industry leaders.
So, looking overall at the market,
sure.
we're continuing to see a decline in the overall contract dollars that the U.S. federal government is awarding. The decline in fiscal 2014 compared to 2013 was about 3%. Now, one thing we wanted to point out in the study was that if you factor out some of the weapons system lumpiness that is common, depends on when big F-35 contracts get awarded. If you take that out, really the decline last year was only about 1%. So it was really a flat market. And so what we think we're seeing is a stabilization where there was significant declines in contracting dollars beginning in 2010. As the economic stimulus package and then the Iraq war and then the overall defense drawdown went into play. And, of course, sequestration in 2013.
And the Ryan-Murray budget agreement, too, that's kind of like stabilized things
right.
For at least the 2 years, right?
That's right. And that's what we think we saw in the 2014 numbers and we'll see again in the 2015 numbers. Is that stabilization. And even if a second Ryan Murray agreement doesn't get struck this year, the budget caps don't forecast decline in spending. They look at a continuing flatness in the market.
Okay. So in a flat market, who are the winners and losers? Let's look at the spending overall and where we've seen, what's the biggest piece of the spending and where have you seen changes year in, year out? What does that look like? What's that telling you?
Yeah, so we saw a significant drop off in aircraft dollars, again, largely because of timing of major weapon systems.
Is that the F-35?
The F-35 is the big guy there.
Yeah. It's driving everything.
It's the program that ate the Pentagon's budget.
Okay.
So Lockheed Martin is the number one contractor, as it has been all 4 years of the BGov 200. And really, Lockheed Martin's been the number one contractor since its formation from Lockheed and Martin Marietta back in the 90s. But their contract obligations last year dropped off about $10 billion, and that was largely F-35 timing. But we did see about 120 companies in the BGov 200 rankings actually increase their market share, and that a lot of that is in the technology services space, where we saw sort of the post sequestration effect. Agencies had hoarded or held off on a lot of purchases in the technology arena in 2013, and we saw them renew their purchasing in that area in 2014, and also in the health area. The way I like to put it is, when the big struggle in the contracting dollar arena is guns versus grandma, and grandma is now winning as the population ages and more money is being spent on healthcare related services, Medicare, TRICARE for the Defense Department. That's really where The budget dollars are moving, and as a consequence, where the contract dollars are moving.
Right. So Cameron, is that, you know, one of the things I think we've talked about before is that it seems like that civilian spending, right? To pick up on what Brian said, civilian spending, especially in IT, is increasing. Have I got that right? Whereas DOD, it sort of remained flat. It's sort of like that rebalancing post conflict.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's partly, as Brian said, driven by demographics. It's also, you know, if the total defense dollars are down for the reasons that Brian pointed out earlier, it's also sort of a share of the pie, if you will, devoted to healthcare issues. And it's secondary effects, of course, of the downsizing that's coming with the military is the increase in the vets population. And so even though that's on the civilian side, from a budgetary standpoint, you could think about it as a secondary effect of military operations.
Okay. And so I have another question. It's in, you know, looking at some of your guys' data, I said facility-related services, it's like the second biggest category. And I guess there's an increase this year.
There was.
Is that around one particular procurement? Or because I'm sitting here, you know, I worked in government 20 years and like, why is this so big, what seems like all of a sudden? Why is that, Brian?
Well, one reason is that post-sequestration effect. So in 2013, okay. Agencies mm-hmm. really tamped down on the spending that they were doing around facility-related services. The Energy Department in particular is a standout here. Their facilities-related services spend increased in 2014 as the budget picture turned into more toward normalcy, and they were able to devote the dollars that they wanted to the national labs and to the other major Energy Department facilities that are managed by government contractors.
And DOD, and I learned this years ago working with the Army, they tend to treat facilities maintenance dollars as a piggy bank. When in doubt, break the bank and use that money for other things,
yeah.
And then hope you get it back later. And so deferred maintenance, while it has its long-term costs in terms of the life cycle of building replacement, it's a place you can go in the short run for cash.
Okay. So, and another area I wanted to ask you about is, you know, it sounds like, you know, companies who are winners have been focusing more on the information technology services space, right?
And health.
Right. And then knowledge-based services is the biggest piece of the pie. What's going on in that particular market in terms of, you know, I think there's, you know, caps or reporting requirements that, you know, folks have to, you know, comply with these days. And do you see that number? What do you see that number doing in the future?
Yeah, that's a tight market because the Congress has placed a cap on the services contracting dollars at the Defense Department, which is the biggest buyer of services in the government.
And DOD buys more services than goods now, as you
right.
know,
mm-hmm.
Roger. So it's a big weight.
And one of the interesting consequences we're seeing is some industry fallout in the ways companies structure themselves. So the highest newly ranked company in the Big Gov 200 is a company called Vectrus, which was a spinoff of Excellus. And
okay.
Vectrus,
mm-hmm.
Vectrus is a pure play government services provider. Vast majority of the money it wins comes from the Defense Department. And so you see this sort of sorting out in the rankings of companies that are becoming more and more focused on the services space. We saw this is the latest in a line of spinoffs and divestitures that we've seen in the rankings the past couple of years, such as the SAIC Leidos split a couple years ago and the Ingility spinoff from L3 a few years ago. All of these creating sort of more pure play defense services companies in particular. And what will be interesting to see in the coming year or two is we think that there will be a subsequent wave of consolidation.
I was going to ask you about that. You know, with a flat market and, you know, more competition, I mean, the way to grow, right, in this market is going to be acquisitions.
Yeah, it's stealing share. I mean, it's very competitive. And Brian and I, when we first met, it's over 3 years now, we talked about, we thought that the market would experience this kind of shakeout. It took longer, I think, to begin to manifest itself and gain some momentum, in part because of the uncertainty around the budget, But as companies have gotten a little more clarity about that the budget is relatively flat, that it makes it easier for them to make decisions about mergers, acquisitions, and divestitures.
Right. If there's more certainty in what the numbers are going to look like moving forward, you can make, you know, better business decisions, right?
That's reduce
some of that uncertainty and that risk. So you know how to maneuver in the market and where you can target your growth or acquisitions for that matter. But right now, guys, we do have to take our first break. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Brian Friel. He is a senior contracts analyst at Bloomberg Government, and Cameron Luthy, Cam, the budget man from Bloomberg Government, who will talk more numbers. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Cameron Luthy. He is a senior budget analyst at Bloomberg Government, and Brian Friel. He is a senior contracts analyst at Bloomberg Government. And we're talking about the market and many different things, aspects of the market. And Bloomberg Government on June 8th released its BGov 200 Federal Industry Leaders 2015 report, which I highly recommend to folks take a look at it. You learn a lot about what's going on in the market. And that leads to my first question for this segment. And, Brian, in the first segment, you mentioned healthcare as a area where we're seeing growth. Can you just talk a little bit more about, where that growth is centered and, are there, particular companies that you've identified that, are pretty active in that area?
Yeah, so two of the areas where we've seen a significant amount of growth in contracting dollars is in health IT at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which has responsibility for those two programs, which are the largest health programs in the country, as well as the responsibility for implementation of the 2010 Affordable Care Act. And so that's driven a lot of growth there. The other place where we've seen a lot of health IT growth is at the Veterans Affairs Department, which released a contract called T4 a few years ago. And one of the new companies on the list this year is called Systems Made Simple, which has been the top performer on that T4 contract. Now, it's the first and last time that company will be on the list because they've been acquired.
Oh, really? Wow.
Right. But they've subsequently been acquired. Our rankings reflect acquisitions during the fiscal year. So that acquisition occurred. Lockheed bought Systems Made Simple later in the calendar year of 2014. So they'll come off the list next year. But one that will likely be there again next year is Maximus, which was a big state and local health IT player that made big inroads into the federal space, particularly at Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Right. And then TRICARE, too, they're about to embark on some IT spending, right, to modernize. I believe they're going to be doing something as well.
That's probably the biggest opportunity right now in health IT for federal contractors. This summer, they'll award their Defense Healthcare Management Systems Modernization contract, which has life cycle costs of $11 billion. And along with that, there will be a lot of ancillary work as the department consolidates its IT efforts from across the services under the new Defense Health Agency. And so that agency is working on a new multiple-award contract called HITS, and that's likely to generate hundreds of millions of dollars a year in obligations. So all relatively new work, and so definitely a growth area for these contractors.
Right, and as HITS, what stage is that in? Is it just planning stages right now? They got a draft out or anything?
The next event is an industry day in July. And so that's when we expect to hear the timeline. When will the draft RFP be out? When will the final RFP be out? The backstory there is that the predecessor agency, TRICARE Management Activity, had a central contract called the DCITMS 3 and decided not to recompete it and instead move the work on to government-wide acquisition contracts that are run by GSA and NIH. And now that they've got a new name and sort of more authority, they've decided to go ahead and put out this new contract.
Right. So that sounds like it could be a potential contract duplication of what, if they were meeting their requirements through other government-wide vehicles like Alion or whatever, or NIH's COS P3 contract, right? The question, I think it's a fair question, what changed? Why do they not meet your needs now?
Yeah, and I think it's safe to assume that a lot of the work that has moved from DCITMS 3 onto Alliant and CIOSP will, if they create this contract, would move back.
Yeah, so it's kind of musical chairs, right?
Because we don't have enough vehicles, Roger.
Right, yeah, absolutely. You got it. You got the answer, Cameron. That's absolutely right. And that's what's going on right now, yeah. So, you know, another thing, you know, I don't want to put on my DJ hat here, but I want to ask you, like, say, who are the movers in the top 200? You know, what are some companies that you that have, you know, that have, you know, gone up the charts, so to speak, from last fiscal year to this fiscal year?
Yeah, well, one I'll point out that entered the top 20 for the first time is AECOM, and that's again an M&A story. They bought URS, and so now AECOM is the top engineering and construction pure play contractor in the federal government, although they do other things as well. An interesting new contractor toward the bottom of the rankings this year is a company called Digital Management, which was an 8A company and graduated and has had success in winning work on non-8A set-aside programs, Alliant Small Business, for example, and has won some single award contracts that it doesn't have to constantly compete for orders against its competitors for. And so there's also—
That's pretty impressive. To the top 200?
It's the first one that I've noted in the 4 years that we've been doing it. There are other formerly small businesses that have moved into the ranks, particularly in the value-added reseller space, as the 2010 Small Business Jobs Act set-aside authority on multiple work contracts has really pushed reseller work to the small businesses. So Red River, FCN are some of the value-added reseller small businesses that have been moving up pretty rapidly in the rankings.
Right. Cameron, any companies you'd point to that?
Not anything to add to that list. I think that's a good representative sample. It's I think important to note that as the federal landscape, as we talked about earlier, becomes a little more stable from a budget standpoint, that the shakeout of companies with mergers, acquisitions, and divestitures is going to continue, and so we'll experience some volatility in which companies are in the top 200 from 1 year to the next. There'll be change, I think, right, as we go forward.
So, and you know, and I don't know if you guys have looked at this, but like the share of cloud services in the federal space, is that increasing as we would expect? I mean, you mentioned IT services is a big play, and it's what's driven a lot of the growth. Where companies, you said 100 about 120 have increased, and that's a lot of that you can attribute to the IT area. You know, the two things, there's two sort of things in the market that sort of are interesting to me in the IT side, and that is, you know, software as a service, cloud services, that dynamic, and also, and this is maybe an unknown, like where cyber is going to take us, right? Because just, you know, you get the latest OPM incident and, you know, there'll be further requirements probably coming out of Congress for cyber and more money being focused on cyber. Cameron, you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, one of the things that we picked up just in the last 24 hours, and I don't know the specifics, but there's going to be sort of out of the White House focus on HTTP secure. The federal agencies need to beef up their, they've got to all be on the same standard in terms of security. And while that's at a lower level, basically you have to, the cyber market is really needs to be disaggregated. You have to look at the degree to which cyber is built into every IT system now, whether right. you call it information assurance or information security. It's cyber by
right. It could be anything. It's right. It could be medical equipment that plugs into the network at a VA hospital.
Right.
That's got to
so
have
so that somebody can't hack in and turn off your IV.
Right.
I mean, so all the way up to, you know, and we're strictly
continuous diagnostic monitoring. Those kind of services too. Yeah.
Yep. And when you have these kinds of events like the OPM event the other day, and I was interested to find out that they weren't just looking at current U.S. government employees, but historical data as well. So I'm in there.
Right.
I don't know what they would want with my data, but, you know, you get the point.
What do you mean? They need a budget analyst.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
I know. So, hey, so you would be fair to say we'll probably see not only – you probably see unfunded requirements being added by the government and or Congress, but also some additional funding in the cyber arena.
Yeah, and I think
it's probably safe to say.
Huh? I think it's pretty easy. So, you know, government agencies have to make their business case, right, for IT investments. They go to the eGov office and they lay out their, you know, exhibit 300 and they say, hey, look, we got
I remember those.
Yeah. And they call them, you know, different names, but you get the idea. It's pretty easy to make the case that you need to invest in an upgrade to existing systems for cybersecurity reasons, whereas other requests for money might fall on deaf ears at OMB. That one they'll listen to.
Right. They're going to be focusing on that. Yeah, absolutely. There's a growth opportunity right there. So, guys, we do have to take our next break. My guests today are Brian Friel. He is a senior contracts analyst at Bloomberg Government, and Cameron Luthy. He's a senior budget analyst at Bloomberg Government. And when we come back, we'll talk about a particular piece of this market, and that's the multiple award contracting environment, that dynamic and what's going on there, and get into some of the analysis Cameron and Brian have done. With regard to that market, that aspect of the market. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Cameron Luthy. He's a senior budget analyst at Bloomberg Government, and Brian Friel. He's a senior contracts analyst, also from Bloomberg Government. And in this segment, guys, I think we'll talk a little bit about, you know, an aspect of the federal market. We've been talking a lot about the overall federal market and some of the trends in it and some of the movers on the charts and that sort of thing. But, you know, a big piece of the market, and to me, you know, given my background, it's a pretty fascinating area, is the multiple award contracts, or as Bloomberg is calling them, the Big Macs. And, you know, I have to say, I don't want to, you know, digress a little bit, but I guess I will, is that, you know, I grew up in Presque Isle, Maine, a little small town. It was a big deal when he got a McDonald's in that town. It's like, yo, that was the biggest thing that happened when I was in the 1970s, let me tell you. So I love Big Macs. So, and I love to talk about Big Macs. So, but these are multiple award contracts. So let's get at it. So first of all, can you talk about how big is that market, Brian? And, you know, are there some specific trends that you've pulled out from your analysis of it?
Well, you might even say that the Big Mac market at this point is supersized, Roger.
Okay, very good. I like that.
About 1 in 4 federal procurement dollars now move through multiple award contracts, and we, in our definition, we count both GSA schedules and non-schedule multiple award contracts. Basically, these are two-step contracts where first an agency pre-selects vendors and then competes orders among those pre-selected companies, and the amount of money that has moved through them has steadily increased over the past couple decades. They really got their start in the 90s. But what we noticed in the last year is actually a slight decrease in the amount of work moving through multiple war contracts, largely driven by the end of the wars. The multiple war contract model is designed to be flexible. It's designed to be able to scale up and scale down as needs come and go. And it's not really surprising to see that the dollars moving through these contracts have fallen as the wars have come down. A lot of logistics work, transportation services were done through multiple war contracts for the wars, and so those have fallen off. I think we also see a little bit of multiple war contract fatigue. These contracts can be very complex to award and then to administer, and they can be protested just like any other contract. Whereas originally they were not able to. And so some of the advantages of multiple contracts have maybe fallen off.
Well, I think, you know, to your point about the fatigue or the falling off, I mean, and the complexity of the awards is, you know, at the contract level, that's the genesis, in my view, of the OASIS model of award, where it's very objective based and scoring, and you sign the points and they laid it all out in the in Section M of the solicitation. And even have self-scoring contractors doing this, or the offerors doing their self-scoring. I mean, a lot of that, I mean, is to streamline the process, but a lot of it is to try to reduce the complexity of the evaluation on the part of the government by making it much more objective as opposed to subjective best value trade-offs. It's and that's a trend that actually is increasing, the use of that approach. You know, GSA is doing it on couple other contract vehicles, and potentially even on the next version of Alliant for award purposes.
That's right.
So, with regard to, you know, to the max, I know there's some interesting trends. Can you first talk about small business and what, you know, we had the Small Business Jobs Act of 2010, and we're still implementing some of the 5 years later, there's still stuff being implemented in regulation, which sort of tells you something about the wheels of government. But, you know, in terms of, post that new law and some of the implementation and just even the emphasis on small business acquisition, what are you seeing in the MAC area?
We definitely think that act had a really major impact on the awards to small businesses on multiple work contracts. The percentage of dollars awarded to small businesses through MACs has been increasing steadily since that law really started being implemented. And now 40% of MAC dollars are awarded to small businesses. That compares to just over 20% in the overall federal contracting space. SOUP was just the NASA's government-wide contract for IT commodities is a great example. Now, 70% plus of the contract dollars in 2014 were awarded to small businesses, largely because of the new authorities available under the Small Business Jobs Act.
Right, and they just awarded NASA SOUP 5, right?
SOUP 5
and I think
out.
There's a lot of small businesses on that. Is that
there's,
correct?
There's a lot of small
Even more
businesses.
Than the prior one, right?
That's right. And so we wouldn't be surprised to continue to see the vast majority of prime dollars awarded through small business resellers on that contract.
And another thing I think you guys picked up on is the competition for MAC dollars and what has happened there. And it seems, I mean, it's to me, it's sort of logical that if the market's flat and you're going to potentially have more competition because there's less opportunities, right? Or the opportunities may be bigger too. People are bundling. I don't want to use a small business word that they don't like, but right. they're putting things together in a bigger task order as opposed to not previously.
Right. Definitely the scope of task orders is increasing. They were seeing the average size of the task orders on multiple work contracts has been steadily increasing. And therefore the stakes are higher for these competitions. And also, as you said, there's a limited pie. There's not that many new opportunities out there. The bulk of competitions are in recompetes. And so we're seeing a lot more companies saying, you know what, I'm going to take on the incumbent here and go after their task order. And so we're seeing the number of bidders per order rise over the past couple of years.
That's a government problem. I mean, the policy, we would say they like that, the fact that there's more competition. And you've also picked up on an interesting point about incumbency and, you know, what it means in this particular market, some trends. You started to touch on a little bit, but what's going on with incumbents? You said they're being challenged more.
That's right.
Are they losing more or?
Well, on MAX, the data is a little bit tricky. So we've done some sort of some high level analysis on incumbency, the incumbency factor on MAX. And what we generally see on those MAX is that companies that used to win the bulk of the work are winning a smaller share over time. And so we interpret that to mean that challengers are coming in and winning more of the competitions on MAX. But a lot of that probably has to do with the set-aside phenomenon that we talked about, that work that was previously open to anybody is now only open to small businesses.
Right, set-aside of orders under the Small Business Jobs Act.
And that's why it's important to disaggregate. If you're talking about MAX, as Brian said, the data is tricky to get at, okay, well, why didn't the incumbent win on the recompete on a particular task? Whereas if you're talking single awards, I think Brian's got some initial data there as well.
Yeah, we did a look at incumbent win rates on major recompetes, single award services contracts worth $100 million or more since 2012. And generally, we were seeing incumbents win most of those contract recompetes from 2012 to 2014. But this year we're seeing a dramatic fall off in the incumbent win rate. They're winning less than a third right now of the recompetes. And we think a big driver of that is contract restructuring. So in the 2012 through 2014 period, only 15% of contracts were restructured. And by that, I mean either bundled or the scope increased or broken up.
Right.
But we're seeing a lot more of that acquisition strategy shift at agencies. A great example is the Air Force. The Air Force has been taking its big weapon system sustainment contracts and breaking them up into a lot of pieces. And as a consequence, the incumbents are are losing at the Air Force much more frequently than at any of the other services.
Right. And Cameron, isn't it, is there a potential cause and effect too when you look at the data with regard to the Small Business Jobs Act and more dollars going to small business because you can set aside orders under multiple work contracts or you can do reserves? So things that may previously have been, you know, open to all contractors on a contract are now being set aside. Is that part of the trend as well?
Yeah, that definitely is part of it. It's not that there's some sort of anti-incumbency bias necessarily, although we know anecdotally that does sometimes occur at some agencies. I think that the Small Business Act implications are significant here. It's hard to disaggregate the data. You know, we know anecdotally that sometimes customers will go to the vendor and say, you've done great work, but I've used you for the last three, you know, cycles in a row, and people are going to think we're too cozy, and I may have to look at another vendor and, you know, the next recompete, that kind of thing. But it's hard to get at that in any sort of quantitative way.
Right, right. And that would be also, you can always be a subcontractor somewhere now.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So, exactly. You've been to this movie.
All right. So, and speaking, it's intermission. So we have to take another break. So I have to come back. We'll be talking more to Cameron Luthy. He's a senior budget analyst at Bloomberg Government. And Brian Friel, he's a senior contracts analyst at Bloomberg Government as well. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of Big Macs and look at a couple of key procurements that are, key Macs out there, like what's going on in the GSA schedules world, potentially, maybe a little VA as well, but also C4D, what's going on there. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Brian Friel. He's a senior contract analyst at Bloomberg Government. And Cameron Luthy, he is a senior budget analyst at Bloomberg Government. And when we took the break, I mentioned the GSA Schedules Program and, you know, the biggest Mac out there, right?
That's right.
Collectively, you know, year in and year out. And so I just open it up and ask you, you know, Brian, what are you seeing in terms of the numbers, the GSA schedules, any trends that you've picked out?
Sure. Well, you know, Schedule 70 in and of itself for technology is the largest Mac in the government. But overall, the GSA schedule share of the market has been declining. And where we see the work moving has largely been toward the non-schedule MACs. Agencies are deciding not to go through GSA and instead award work through their own contract vehicles. I think the biggest story this year will be the professional services schedule consolidation, where MOBIS and FABS and Logworld,
yeah. That's MOBIS, FABS, Pez.
Oh, that's the one.
Right,
yeah.
This is a recognition that agencies have really complex services requirements, and by consolidating them, you may actually see increased use of that schedule by the agencies because they feel like they can award more complex task orders.
Right. It's interesting you guys are seeing a decline because, you know, there's that aspect of it too. Consolidating, and it's still the other piece of the puzzle is the flexibility of it, and just for a second, you know, the ability to do other direct costs and that sort of thing. So when you're doing a service requirement, you can actually include materials at cost on orders. Right now, they still can't do that. So sounds like agencies are spending their dollars other places and probably creating additional contract duplication, so to speak, in some ways, or seeing less reduction in the number of contracts than we might otherwise see if those were more efficient contract vehicles. One of the contracts that's out there that's always interesting, and it's a big one, and I think it has about three, you tell me how many, C4D, how many contractors are on that? How much money goes through
that? Almost 4,000 contractors on it, and around $5 billion or so in contract obligations a year. About 40% of every knowledge-based services dollar that the Navy spends goes through that contract.
Right. So any insights on what's going on with that contract vehicle, where it may be going?
Right. So it's that program is actually a lot like the schedules in that it has a rolling admissions process where new companies can come on all the time. And I've long expected that the Navy would just keep rolling it forward because from their perspective, it's been a very successful program in terms of consolidating work. We had an event where Elliot Branch, the key procurement official at the Navy, spoke. And he told us that the Navy is actually thinking twice about what to do when the Seaport E initial contract period expires in 2019. The contract was originally created in 2004 with a 15-year window. So he's saying he wants to hear from industry. Do companies want to see Seaport E continue? Do Navy buyers want to see Seaport E continue? Should they move work to other vehicles? The Air Force and the Army have both committed to using GSA's OASIS for more services work in the future. The Navy has not made any such commitment because it has Seaport E. Is it possible that the Navy might consider using OASIS down the line? Now, a lot of people would probably say, maybe this is just the Navy putting out some feelers, but at the end of the day, we'll stick with Seaport E. And that's quite possible, or maybe some new version of Seaport. But it has huge implications, whatever the outcome of the conversations, for a company since so much work goes through that contract.
Right, and it'd be a definitely change in the market, right, for those companies, right? So what, how many of the, you said there's about 4,000. How many companies really get the work under Seaport E?
Closer to like 800 companies actually get any work through Seaport E. So that's one consideration. Is it simply the fact that they've created a too large of a pool of suppliers for a relatively limited demand from the government? Another potential effect that they'll look at is the structure of the contract, which is largely for cost plus orders. It limits profit margin pretty substantially for companies, and there are companies that have told me that they don't compete on Seaport because they have no the margins don't match their business model.
So these are companies who worked really hard to get on the vehicle, and right. Now don't bid on the task orders that are available under that umbrella.
Right. Yeah, and it's that catch 22, right? Where like if I'm not on it, I'm locked out of the market. So at least if I'm on it, I guess I can decide whether on an individual basis whether I want to compete for something. But at least I have that choice,
right?
As opposed to if you're not there. So guys, just one of the things that I always like to ask about in this area is, and I mentioned it earlier, sort of contract duplication and numbers. There's the dollars going through them, and there's the number of MACs that Bloomberg's identified. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, so the number of MACs over the past 10 years has really exploded and peaked 2 years ago at more than 2,600. We're actually seeing a very slight decline. It's still, well over 2,000 vehicles. But we do think that we are seeing the beginnings of a consolidation wave of agencies saying, maybe we have too many of these vehicles. And prime example is the Air Force, which has probably hundreds of professional services, multiple award contracts that have been awarded throughout the country. And now the Air Force saying, before you put any work on one of those vehicles, or before you go out and create another vehicle, consider using OASIS. And I think we'll see more and more of those conversations across government. And I think we'll continue to see those number of vehicles drop off.
Well, that would be a good sign because, right, I mean, based on what I've looked at your analysis, you indicate that at the same time they're starting to do that. Last year, the DOD number of MACs increased, and they're the one area where they did increase, right? Overall,
right.
In terms of numbers,
and a lot of those are really what I call teeny little MACs.
Okay,
like $10 million, $5 million ceilings.
They're mini MACs.
Mini MACs, okay. Right? Exactly.
They're sliders.
Right. Okay. Very good, Cameron.
the other thing I think to keep in mind, I think both industry and government would like to see some consolidation in the number of MACs. It adds to the cost of doing business for the vendors, and it doesn't make the buyer's job any easier necessarily. There's a lot of proprietary
parochial?
Yeah,
parochial.
Thank you. Parochial. Yeah,
that's what I'm here for, Cameron.
I had a buddy, Rob Rayom, used to say that it was the drag stuff to it phenomenon. There was a pride of ownership. It's our Mac, and we want to drag business to it from other people's Macs.
Right.
And that's part of the sort of pride of ownership has led to this proliferation. And even though FPP has talked about reducing the number of Macs, it's hard to do when you have that sort of incentive, a behavioral incentive. Well, I can make a big name for myself because I've got my own Mac kind of thing. The other thing, though, that I would say, to be fair, the number of Macs doesn't tell the whole story. There are some which you might call zombie Macs.
Okay.
They're out there, but there's no work being booked on them. There's no task orders being issued. They're not, you know, you see
what
I'm getting?
Is that sort of like the World War Z of government contracts?
Yeah, they're the undead.
Okay. I like that. So, hey, another aspect of that that I wanted to ask you about in those terms is we haven't really seen OFPP's business case analysis. They can't really point to anything where that, you know, a contract has been otherwise killed because it went through that analysis. Is that fair to say? Is that what you guys
have seen? Yeah, we confirmed that. Ann Rung, the administrator of OFPP, came in for an event at BGov a few weeks ago. And I asked her how many vehicles had been killed or prevented from being created, and she said none. And she was actually not sure that she had the authority to block an agency from using it, but she was going to investigate.
Right. Well, to her credit, in her December 4th memo of 2014, then one of the initiatives is try to strengthen that business case analysis, and I think she's right on that. That's an important thing
to
tackle. So she's on the mark there.
Absolutely. And there may be somewhat of a deterrence effect because OFPP's taken the positions they've taken. It may have caused agencies to have second thoughts about even proposing a new MAC. So it's like the dog that didn't bark in the Sherlock Holmes mystery.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I don't have that one reference. Right. I'm just kidding. but we have to end the show, guys. I'll have to have you come back. You know, when the new fiscal year comes in, we can come back and we talk about what's going on moving forward for, I guess that'll be FY16. Oh, yes, and it'd be remiss if I didn't mention that I'll be joining Cameron and Brian for the
Race to the Finish.
Race to the Finish, a July 15th event. Bloomberg and the Coalition for Government Procurement are hosting out in Tysons. Talking about the rest of the fiscal year, what it looks like from a spending obligation and competitive marketplace. Again, thank my guests, Cameron Luthi, Senior Budget Analyst, Bloomberg Government, and Brian Friel, Senior Contracts Analyst at Bloomberg Government. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Fred News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.